And I'm going to talk about some of the technologies that we're working on with the Horticulture Innovation Lab that are helping us to preserve the products that are harvested in many parts of the world. Okay, so you're probably all aware that we still have some big challenges worldwide in terms of undernourishment and poverty, but we are making progress, but we still have a ways to go. And hidden hunger or micronutrient deficiencies are still a big problem, and you can see the darker areas on that map are where the problems are very extreme, and so a lot of places in Africa and India as well. Horticulture provides a great opportunity to address the malnutrition, and also is a good product in terms of not contributing to obesity or overnutrition. And of course, horticultural crops are also good income generators. So we like to focus on increasing the quantity, the quality, and the seasonal availability of nutritional horticultural crops. But these crops are more perishable, and so it makes it a little bit more challenging once the crop's been harvested to hold on to it and have it for consumption during the off season. So how can we preserve those crops? How can we maintain those nutrients? One of the key ways, of course, is through the cold chain, and another way is through drying, or the dry chain as we like to call it, stabilizing products through drying. So I'm going to talk about a couple technologies that the Horticulture Innovation Lab has been promoting and testing around the world that can help to preserve that harvest of nutritional foods. So first of all, temperature. So for those who aren't focused on post-harvest biology, temperature really is the key to preserving crops after harvest. Holding things at the lowest safe temperature preserves and reduces all the causes of deterioration that are listed here on this slide, especially things like water loss and disease development, and also further ripening. So one of the technologies we've been working on is an inexpensive cold storage technology. Some of you have seen this before. It's the CoolBot technology, where you take a standard air conditioner unit and you match that up with an insulated room, which could be an insulated room made from a variety of different kinds of materials. And we're starting to see some adoption of this technology around the world. And the next presentation, you're going to hear a little bit more about how that works and some of the challenges. But this farmer here from Cambodia is someone, actually she's a marketer in Cambodia, who's adopted this technology to store her safe vegetables. So the way the CoolBot works is it's a controller that has a heater that goes into the thermostat of the air conditioner. It tricks the air conditioner to think that the room is still too warm. So the air conditioner just keeps cooling and cooling, and you can cool down to as low as 2 degrees Celsius in the insulated room. So you match this up with a window air conditioner unit, and you have a cold room. And it's actually manufactured by a company in New England. Well, it used to be in New England. Now they're in Denver. They're called Store It Cold. So shifting to drying, a great way to stabilize production for off-season consumption. It's been used for many, many, many years, back to ancient times. It can add value by developing dried products. And, you know, you can do just simple sun drying, solar drying, or you can use a solar dryer that keeps the product up off the ground. And a variety of different kinds of products have been dried, including a wide range of horticultural crops. And so open air drying is used in many parts of the world. I think it's still used a bit in California, although they are starting to move away from that for raisins, as you can see on the left. And then in Bangladesh on the right, we see some drying on mats on the ground and a little bit up on the roof. One of the challenges with open air drying, though, is that insects can get to your product, animals can get to your product, so they can eat it, they can contaminate it, and then if it's not dried fast enough, then you can get mold development. And so there are a range of problems with doing it that way, although it is very common in many parts of the world. You do see some use of cabinet dryers like this one here, and with the diagram maybe you can see, this is the area that collects the solar heat from the sun. The back of it is black. And then that hot air travels up and goes through the trays of product and then out the top. And so in that way, it dries the product. Well, at UC Davis, some of our emeritus faculty and extension specialists developed the UC Davis chimney dryer. That was Jim Thompson and Michael Reed. The way this chimney dryer works is it has a long table that's covered with black cloth or plastic, and that's the solar collector. And then the heat from that black plastic rises up. And on the top of the table, you have one or two trays, and those trays can be all the way along the length of the table. And those trays contain your product. So the heat rises up and then flows across the top of the trays. And when the hot air gets to the chimney at the end, the heat rises, and so that pulls the air through the tunnel and up the chimney. So you get high airflow and higher temperatures, and it works better in places where the weather's partly cloudy. So here you can see the clear plastic being put over the top of the table with the trays of product. And just a comparison between the chimney dryer and the cabinet dryer, one of the great things about the chimney dryer is that, first of all, it has much higher capacity for holding product. It can hold 4.5 kilograms compared to 2.25 in the cabinet dryer. And then the air temperatures tend to be significantly higher in the chimney dryer because it has much more solar collection space. And then the airflow in the chimney dryer is also about six times faster than in the cabinet dryer. So that's taking all that humid air that's coming out of your product and moving it away so that you can you get faster drying. So you can also dry products much faster because of that higher airflow and higher temperature in about 2 days as compared to 5 days in the cabinet dryer. So if you look at the amount of product you can dry per day, you can see the capacity is quite a bit higher in the chimney dryer. So we've been promoting this around the world, and you're going to hear more about some use of this in Bangladesh in the next presentation, but we have a horticulture training and services center in Kindia, Guinea, and they have some young people who are learning about these technologies, and they are going out and selling the solar dryer and other services to various farmers. And some of them have started to dry different products, like these pineapples you see on the right, that are being dried and then sold in local gas stations to consumers. So we are seeing some good penetration on that. So the next technology I want to mention, also related to the dry chain, are drying beads. And this is a technology that's made by a company called Rhino Research. And they are beads that are made of zeolite clay that's then baked at a particular temperature. And they absorb water, kind of like your silica gels, but much more strongly. So the zeolite or the drying beads can take the relative humidity in the air down to less than 10%. And they absorb about 30% of their weight in water. So initially, we were testing this technology for drying of vegetable seeds to make sure the seeds were at the right moisture content for safe storage to maintain germination and viability. But we've been expanding a bit into looking at dried products of various types. Because if things aren't dried low enough moisture content, you have the risk of mold and aflatoxin production, which is a big problem in many parts of the world. So this slide here shows some of the benefits when you use them for vegetable seeds and you use the drying beads. So you may not be able to see, but where you see the high density of plants, those rows are seeds that were dried with the drying beads and maintained in a dry condition during storage, whereas the empty patches where we had low germination and low seedling vigor, those are seed that were dried with more traditional practices. So the company has a range of different kinds of containers that you can use to put your product in to dry it. So you put it in together with the drying beads. I did forget to mention that they can be regenerated by heating them to high temperatures in an oven, and then they can be reused over and over again. We actually think for horticultural crops, when we're talking about drying, it's best to do some solar drying first, and then maybe use the drying beads to finish it off if you're not able to get to a low enough moisture content. I wanted to also mention another technology that was developed by our experts at UC Davis, and that's the dry card, which is a moisture sensor. This is based on humidity paper called Hydrian paper. It's just like pH paper that you're all familiar with, but this has cobalt chloride in the paper. It changes color with relative humidity. So when the paper turns pink, we know that the relative humidity is too high. And so for dried products. So basically what you do, you take your dried product, put it in a container, put the card in there with it, and wait about 45 minutes for the humidity, the moisture inside the product to equilibrate with the air outside. It's called the equilibrium relative humidity. And then based on the color of the card, you can know whether your product has been safely dried enough or whether it needs to be dried further before it's stored. So it's a real simple technology. The card, the color changes back and forth as many times as you want, so long as you keep it away from free moisture. So we're working to promote this card. So I have some up here to give away. If you're interested in trying one out, come up and get one afterwards. Okay, so finally I wanted to end by showing some data from one of the graduate students who worked with our program, where he was comparing the nutrient content of dried products. So that's always a big question. What happens to the nutrients when you dry things? So he looked at the solar cabinet dryer compared to the drying beads. And it's kind of a unique opportunity because the drying beads, essentially you can dry at ambient conditions. Whatever temperature you happen to be at, you really that'll be the temperature you're drying at. Whereas with the cabinet dryer, we got to temperatures as high as 53 degrees Celsius at the peak in California conditions. So in this graph here, just to orient you, we have mango on the left and tomato on the right. The dark bars, the black is the fresh nutrient content. The gray is product dried with drying beads, and then the cabinet dryer is in white in the middle. So first of all, you can see the top two graphs is ascorbic acid. So of course, ascorbic acid does decrease with drying. I think that's been pretty well documented, but we do find that the decrease is less with the drying beads where we don't have the high temperatures. So it's a little bit of a combination of the drying as well as the temperature. So we can retain more nutrients if we dry at a lower temperature. And we saw similar results for beta carotene on the lower level. But for alpha tocopherol in the middle, we found that the effect there, the loss of nutrients we saw particularly in tomato, was really just due to drying. The temperature was not really in effect there, at least between those two temperatures. It was mainly due to just the drying itself. So I'd like to go on and try this with the drying beads at a low temperature, because there's no reason we can't dry at 5 degrees Celsius or even 0 degrees Celsius. And that would be interesting to see how much nutrients we can retain doing that. I wanted to let you know that the chimney solar dryer the instructions for how to build and how to use one is available on our website. We have videos and a manual, so if you're interested, you can take a look at that. And with that, I thank you for your time, and I think we have time for one or two questions. If anyone has a question, yes. Oh, so the question is, have I thought about pre-harvest treatments that might enhance drying after harvest? I'm not aware of that, so I'd be interested to know if you know of something. I know that sometimes you can dip products in, like, salt solutions that will kind of degrade the cuticle a bit and then make them dry faster.
Crops, they dry the plants before they harvest them, you know, to keep, so have you thought, like, no?
Okay, so the question is about whether maybe you could dehydrate the crop a little bit before you harvest it. Right. Right. I know for like nuts and things like that, certainly you want to try to let some of that drying occur before you harvest. I'm not sure. I think it would be a little bit challenging with fresh crops because you could get some degradation of the crop, and also sometimes you have multiple harvests, so you're not. They could fall off. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting area, I guess, an area for further research, perhaps. One last question, and then.
Combining solar drying to give you a more uniform drying temperature at night, you know, during the day, obviously, a lot of sun, so you can get that open air drying, but if you capture that energy and then keep that temperature more stable at night, you get a better dry product. And is the technology there affordable in terms of batteries that will allow combining the, one of your chimney dryers, the other type of with solar energy?
Yeah, so great question. So the question is about combining solar energy with the solar drying to be able to keep higher temperatures at night and continue the drying process. And actually, we've had some discussions in our office, and I think there's some tinkering going on behind the scenes, kind of looking at that. And yeah, it is a challenge because if the temperatures really go down at night or it gets really humid, sometimes it's better to take the product off the dryer and bring it back. But that's a labor and time constraint. So I think it's definitely something to look at.